Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Hello, Marty Marsh. How the heck are you today?
I'm doing great and even better because I'm talking to you.
Aww. Wow. So thank you very much for coming on here and talking to me. You know, as you already know, you are one of my favorite people to talk to.
Thank you.
And you also have the added advantage or disadvantage, whichever way you want to look at it, of knowing me pretty darn well. So one of the reasons that I wanted to do this podcast is because I love these kind of conversations that you and I have always had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't stand small talk and I want to talk about the big things in life. And it's a vulnerability thing for a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to go deep because, and I understand you don't want to, and especially on a recording, you don't want to go on the record with some stuff. But anyway, I really appreciate you being willing to come here and talk to me. And I imagine if I get my way about it, this won't be the only time we do this.
Good.
So I want to start out this first time by asking you, I've asked this of everybody so far. So, and I think you will particularly enjoy this, the freedom of this question. And that is, without mentioning what you do for other people, who are you, Marty Marsh?
Ooh, I know, you know, I've listened to your other podcasts and I've heard people respond to this question. So I knew it was coming and I still didn't prepare for it. you know, what first comes to mind for me is that I'm a husband and a friend to people. I think that's probably being a husband is probably one of the most important roles that I play. And I feel really fortunate that I'm in a really great relationship. So that it's kind of easy to be a husband in this one. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice. I think one of the things about me is that, and I don't know that a lot of people know this, but I consider myself to be an empath. And I didn't come up with that. Another friend of mine and I were talking and she said, you'll understand this because you're an empath like I am. And I'm like, I am. And she goes, my God, of course. And part of that comes up is because I feel everything, you know, with everything that's happening in the world. And I watch way too much news. That's one thing about me is that I watch way too much, you know, so-called news. And it really upsets me. And people say to me, well, don't watch it. Don't watch it. But I've always been a real political junkie. So I'm just drawn to everything that's going on today and taking a look. And I see the injustice in the world, you know, with things that are happening with people. And I just heard about a little 2-year-old boy that killed his mother accidentally with a gun he found in a Paw Patrol pack. Now his dad's been arrested, you know, and they're really young. They were really young people, like 22, 21, 22 years old, something like that. But I just feel those kind of things so deeply when things like that happen and it upsets me. And yet I still am drawn to reading and listening and all of that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
So
how do you manage the emotions that come up?
I do a lot of crying, actually.
What?
Yeah, and that I think is helpful. And I think if I wasn't the kind of guy that would allow myself to cry, then it would probably affect me even worse. But I seem to manage to get through it by just kind of expressing those emotions. And, you know, I do a little ritual that every time I hear an ambulance go by, I learned this from one of my coaching teachers a long time ago. But if the ambulance goes by, I just send love to the people that whatever's happening with them, and just express the wish that I hope they're getting the care that they need. So that's always helpful for me. For some reason, I just tune into that, and every time I hear one, that's just what goes through my head. So, and I make a conscious effort to say that.
I
It makes
love
me feel
that.
better. Well, every time you hear an ambulance, people's lives, somebody's life probably is changing for some reason.
Yeah, and
Or a fire
with
truck,
care in the moment.
Yeah. Where I live right here, there's a fire station, and so I hear the fire trucks and the ambulances when they come out, and they come out frequently. It's just amazing to me
Yeah.
what's happening. But yeah, that's a little mantra that I try to put out to people.
Well, I love that. And you've just hijacked where I was going to go next, but that's fine because it makes me think of a belief that I have that is really kind of far-reaching depending on how the context in which I'm talking about it. But it is that everything is energy. And what allows me to not only think that ritual of yours is really cool, but also to believe that it does make a difference is that everything is energy. And if you are consciously, we talk a lot about shining our light and broadcasting our light and our frequency in the world and to attract people who are drawn to that particular kind of energy, and that very conscious effort of sending goodwill out, beaming it out, and directing it at wherever that, the ambulance or whatever, wherever it's headed. I just love that. And I think that that is, it certainly makes you feel better, which then leads me to also the idea of like I've been thinking an awful lot about feelings and emotions and how are they generated? How do I need another person to interact with to feel certain emotions? And more I'm finding, no, actually I don't. And it's interesting to think about it in the context of things like loving yourself and feeling lonely. And for me now, lonely has become a much more specific situation than ever before. And for me, lonely has been culled down to identifying the wish or desire for interaction with another human. Whereas before, it had a much broader definition in my mind of and the feelings that come up, this loneliness as a feeling. Oh, I'm not very articulate today. This is not going to be good. So let me back up a minute. There is a vast difference for me between being alone and being lonely. And I spend a lot of time purposefully alone in many contexts, and rarely do I feel lonely. What triggers it most often for me is not when the shit hits the fan in my life. It's when the really great things happen. If there's nobody around to look at and say, "Did you see that shit? Isn't that awesome?" That will trigger me to recognize that in that situation or in li my life in general, I'm single. I'm not married or anything. I don't have a lifelong partner like you do. And there are advantages for both of us in our situations and disadvantages. One of the things that I love about being single
and my little control freak inside loves about being single is that I don't have to consult anyone else's opinion or preference to make a decision.
Yeah,
but that is also can be a big disadvantage. Because not only from the perspective of, well, we know who to blame if that doesn't work out, but also from the perspective of the ability to make a good decision often requires a different perspective than the one you hold. And if I don't, you know, I spend a lot of time alone and I'm not coupled up. So I have to seek out alternative perspectives when I identify that I need one to make a good decision, you know?
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that it is not, it's not the tragedies of life that make, that bring up that lonely feeling for me. It's when the really good stuff happens.
Yeah.
It's, that was a surprise to me. I thought it would be the opposite, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
At least not right now. We grow and evolve and change. So that's always something.
Absolutely. We do. We do.
But yeah.
You know, you talking about being, you know, always wanting to be in control, and that because you're alone, you can be in control and you don't have to. See, I'm one of those people that likes to be in control too. And I sometimes have really difficult time in communicating things because I don't want somebody to tell me no. So even with Bill, I sometimes it's like, I don't even want to talk to him about things because I don't want him to say no, or I don't want him to bring up something that, that I might not have thought about that I don't want to think about, you know?
Yeah.
So I like to be in control, but that's also a disadvantage for me too, because it's very hard for me to reach out for help for anyone. You know, I've often thought that if I really got in trouble and needed help in some way, even though you and I are a long way apart, in where we live, you'd probably be the first person that I would call.
Oh, yay.
In fact,
makes me feel so good.
In fact, well, you know, you're so intertwined with my life too.
Yeah.
We've been friends for such a long time, and I know sometimes we can go for stretches where we're not really communicating much with each other, but then when we do, it's just like, no, you know, no time has passed or anything, but I have made a, because I've had some health problems over the last couple of years, I've and some pretty serious stuff, and it's really made me think a lot about end of life,
because
mm-hmm. I'm not getting any younger, you know, as we say. But I've made a list of everything, you know, like if I die, I didn't say when I die, I just said if I die, you know, a whole list of people to call and let them know. But of course, you're the number one on the list, and Bill knows, and that you're the one that's going to take care of things for me, because you and I have talked about that, mm-hmm. that as far as my business goes and shutting anything down and letting people know and stuff like that, that's going to fall on your shoulders. So, but, and you know, it seems morbid to sometimes to think about it and talk about it, but it's a very real thing. And, you know,
you know, that's the number one reason my lawyer told me that people don't do wills is because they don't want to think about those situations.
Right.
And the decisions related to the situations. And it's, you know, having gone through that process myself, it is difficult to anticipate, particularly the nuances of, well, if this happens, then I'd want this to happen. Or if this instead happens, then that changes things. And then this needs to happen instead. And, but the whole diving into thinking about that event, and it's crazy because none of us just get out of here alive, you know, to every one of us. And so I had to do a lot of self-coaching around, I wanted the peace of mind of knowing that when I do die, some of the harder decisions are already made, and right. none of my kids are going to have to go through. And, you know, once again, to the very last breath, literally, my parents have taught me a lot about, by their example, either things I want to do just the way they did or things I don't want to do in any way that they did, and the complete opposite. And in this instance, you know, Dad died in 2014, and it was such a surprise, and Mom's health has always been so much worse than his, or so we thought. We all expected to be dealing with her death first and then what to do about Dad. And we got the opposite situation. And so it was about 2 years after he died that I elected to finally incorporate, and I set up a trust and a will and everything. And I had given myself enough time, 2 years, to get away from the immediacy of how I felt about him leaving us, mm-hmm. to be able to hopefully objectively think about my own departure, but still close enough to that event that the very real feelings of frustration and if I only could ask him his preference here, or, you know, what to do about Mom. And then again, when Mom died, Mom didn't have, you know, I kept on her, Mom, get a will. Please get a will. And yeah, I will. And she never did. So now I'm the executor of their estate, and, you know, COVID got all that messed up, you know, delayed, and trying to sell their property and all of that, and all the nonsense that goes with that. But, you know, the whole idea of diving into those conversations now while you're lucid and not facing the immediacy of, oh, I'm dying tomorrow kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I hope that I don't know that I'm terminal with anything. I hope I get hit by a bus or something.
Yeah, me too. I want to go out quick.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to suffer.
I know I don't either. That's me. Well, it was funny. I was having a procedure done at the hospital, an unexpected thing. And as they were getting ready to put me under, you know, under the anesthesia to have this done, they asked me if I had an advance directive, which I do, but I didn't have it with me. It was at home. And they said, well, as long as we know you've got it, but would you sign this? I need to sign this paper anyway that says that if something happens, do I want to be resuscitated? And I said, no. And so when Bill and I talked about it later and I told him I did that, he was horrified.
Oh, you hadn't had that conversation yet?
Well, we've had that conversation, but he didn't remember that he didn't think that we had ever agreed that, you know, there would be no resuscitation efforts made or anything like that. And, you know, I need to get that advance directive out and see what we actually put on it.
Yeah. But,
so he was horrified that I had said that in the thing. So, yeah, you know, all of those conversations need to be had. And one of the things I've got to say that I've lost both my mom and dad too, about the same time you did yours.
Mm-hmm.
That they took care of everything right down to the last period. You know, it was just like there was nothing for us to do but go in and finalize the things that they had already arranged. And they're both in the military cemetery or the national cemetery, mm-hmm. there nearby in Florida. And it was so funny when my mother was doing she was doing basically all the work to get all that together and everything. And she was so excited about it. And I said to her, I said, my God, Mama, it sounds like you're really anxious to get there. And she's like, oh, no. I just want to make sure, you know, that everything's taken care of. And I thought, good Lord.
You know, it's funny because my parents are also in the National Cemetery in Wagner County out there. Right. My parents were such opposites in so many ways, right down to what they wanted, how they wanted. They both wanted to be cremated, which surprised me that they even agreed on that. But Mom, Dad wanted to be interred at the National Cemetery. And mom wanted to be ashes spread on their land. I'm like, okay, how can we do both? And when dad died 4 years earlier than mom. So she had his urn at the house. And so when she died, I thought, I'm going to make it to where you both get what you want. So I took dad's urn to the funeral home. We used the same funeral home that we did with, for mom, that we did with dad. And so I said, look, when you get mom in powder form, here's what I want you to do. I want you to open up dad's urn, split his ashes in two, split mom's ashes in two, and combine them in two different containers, put half of each of them back in dad's urn, and then just half of each of them in the, you know, the nondescript box they give it to you in, if you don't get an urn. And so they were spread on their land, half of them, and the other half of them are in the National Cemetery in Wichita.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
And I thought, don't hand me a problem that you think is unsolvable. I will find a way.
Yeah. You know, you talking about this reminds me of two things that I want to tell you. First, I'll tell you the story about this guy. He was 50, I think he was 53 years old, and he died. He found out that he was just, his whole body was just eat up with cancer in all parts. And it just was spreading everywhere. And he died in 12 weeks from the time that he was diagnosed. He died 12 weeks later. Well, I really loved this guy. He was a lot of fun. And his wife, I just was crazy about her. And she was kind of a nut to start with. There was, she was always doing some pretty outrageous things. So he died. And about, I think it was a month or so later before they got around to doing the memorial service. And they were doing the memorial service at their home. So we were all gathered there and everything, you know, and the, they start the service. And one of his kids, one of their kids, says, Ma, they were Italian. She goes, Ma, where is dad? And she goes, oh my God, he's still in the car. So she had been, you know, he had been cremated. So she'd been driving his ashes around all that time back and forth. But just the way she was just like, oh my God, he's still in the car. It was really funny. But besides that, I wanted to tell you, this guy's name was Dennis, and he owned exotic birds. And a lot of them. And so one Saturday morning, my partner at the time called me and said, Dennis needs to get rid of these birds and he's going to take them to a consignment place and he needs help. Can you go over and help him? And I said, oh my God, I am so busy today. I've got so much on my list of things I need to do today. And it was like, and, you know, and then I finally said, yes, I'll go help him. Well, I have to tell you, and I don't know if I can do this without crying, but it was the best day, one of the best days of my life that I spent with him. We got the birds done, and then we spent the rest of the day just visiting with each other and talking about life and stuff. And he at that time still thought he would beat this. He was determined he was going to beat it, and then he didn't. But I will tell you that I've never regretted spending that day, even though I had a lot of other things to do. So I've mentioned to a lot of people this story that, you know, if a friend asks you to help them out with something, just do it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how busy you are, because you really never know how much longer you're going to have. He died about 2 weeks after that.
Oh, wow.
And that you just may not have enough time with those people anymore if they mean something to you. So, but I do draw the line at helping people move. I tell them they can use my truck. I'll say, I got a big ass truck out there. You're welcome to take it and use it. Just don't tear it up. But I'm not going to help you move. I'm sorry. So, there's some things that I do draw the line.
Oh, goodness. But you're right. It's those interactions and time spent with people that you really care about that mean hold the meaning of and the memories that you make with people you care about. I will take to my last breath you and I sitting out in my driveway in my car we were talking, we'd been somewhere, we came back, and we were on a topic that just would not let either one of us go. And we sat in my driveway in the car. I've had the presence of mind after about 20 minutes to turn the car off. We were probably out there for 45 minutes and, you know, we were crying and snotting up and everything. And, but I will remember that until the last day I'm alive.
And I know.
Every time I think about it, I just send you a big hug, much like your ambulance ritual. Mm-hmm. Every time that thought crosses my mind, I just send you a big old jolt of, hey, Suzanne loves you, Marty.
You know, I was going to say earlier, and I'm glad you mentioned the ambulance thing again, and you were talking about the energy that we put out and that the energy works. I really believe that all human beings are connected in some way. I'm not a religious person. I don't mean in that regard, but in some spiritual way, somehow or another, I just believe that we're all connected. I think that's how we can feel empathy for other people and their situations and joy when something happens. I mean, it doesn't have to be something bad. Like you're talking about, you think about the joyful things that's when your loneliness comes up. You know, I think we all can share in joy. I mean, I'm really always happy and excited when somebody does really well with something, you know, or like if I see them start a business and the business takes off and it's really great. Or just stories that I read, you know, about people, you know, musicians and actors and people like that seem to have always known what they wanted to do. And I really admire those people that really go after what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tenacious about it. You know, you read stories about, you know, some little girl that knew at 12 that she wanted to be a singer, you know, a famous singer, and she pushes her. She just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. And actors that do the same thing that can put up with rejection after rejection after rejection, but still keep going and doing it. And it's because they love it so much. And that was what they've wanted to do all along. I've always been jealous of people like that, didn't you? Because I've never been that
way. Yeah. I figured that would come up in our conversation today. And I want to talk about that because it plagues both of us. Probably you more than me.
Me, yeah.
But before we get into that, I want to tell you or ask you, have you read or listened to Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights?
Uh-uh.
10 stars out of 5.
Really?
10. It is so good. And you will feel real confirmed to find out that Matthew didn't know he wanted to be an actor.
Really?
Yeah. And it is such a good book. I don't remember what the first thing, it was probably an interview where he strayed from the usual interview fare of, you know, talking about the movie or whatever, but got into talking about himself and some of his beliefs. And I was fascinated. And so when I found out that he had written it, I immediately bought it and I bought it on Audible and listened to it. And it is so good. It's one of those books that I have, like, now I have the Audible version and I have the hardback. It is such a good book. And what I like about it is not only do you get to hear his perspective about things, but the stories he tells them in a way that he may have done this thing this way, but it's easy to extrapolate how you might could get to the same end using a method that is more congruent for who you are.
Cool.
And the whole concept of green lights, and it's in reference to a traffic light. He says that, you know, life is full of green lights and you can create them for yourself, but there are also red and yellow lights, and sometimes red lights turn green after a while. And that whole analogy is all the way through that book. But I just think it's fascinating. I would love to meet him and have a conversation, and he's one of those people that I think that you could probably talk to for any amount of time and still think you weren't done talking, you know? So that's a good, I highly recommend that book to you. I think you will find a lot of things that interest you in it as well, but it might also go a little way toward a little bit of balm for that jealousness of the people who knew from a very early age or any age really had a stark clarity about what it is they're here to do, which is a good time to bring up, hey, Marty, what do you do?
I was afraid you were going to ask that.
Well, you're allowed to have the long list of answers because you do a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of at a point in my life. I sort of semi-retired last year. Mm-hmm. Started taking Social Security. I'm on Medicare now. You know, it's like, but I'm reminded of people like, I can only ever remember Colonel Sanders, but I know there's a lot of people that if you research it, really did not become successful until after 65, until after age 65. So I keep thinking, you know,
Lucille Ball didn't make it until she was after 40.
Yeah. So, you know, I always figure, well, there's still hope for me to finally, you know, make something of myself. I have always jokingly said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up, or I have no idea what I want to be when I grow up. But you know, there's a lot of truth in jest, so you can say those kind of things, and there's a lot of truth behind them. And I kind of feel that way. In fact, Bill said to me yesterday, and I should probably mention here somewhere that I keep saying Bill. Bill is my husband. Yeah. So, and of course, I know you know that. But anybody else listening to this might wonder who the hell is this Bill guy he's talking about. But anyway, Bill is my husband. So, so anyway, to answer that question, right now I'm not doing much of anything.
Okay.
I'm really in an exploration stage, which I've never allowed myself to do, because you know me, when you and I first met, maybe even by the time that you and I met, I probably had 20 websites or.
Oh, honey. Yes.
I don't remember how many, but all of that blew up. If you recall, I'm sure you don't forget it. I never forget it. All of that blew up on me.
You had over 50 websites in your.
Oh my God. So yeah, you know, see, it was like, if I thought of something, I would go off on a tangent, and because I could build websites, not great like you do, but I could build a workable website. I would just do it.
Yep.
There was a lot of fun in that. And oftentimes I thought, well, maybe I should build websites for other people, but then I didn't want the frustration of building websites for other people. Sometimes I wonder how you do it, you know, because clients are difficult. It's so funny, you know, I've worked with a lot of clients over the years, and the another joke that's true is that, you know, boy, life would be easy if we didn't have to have clients kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So, but I love my clients. I tell you, I think that every client I've ever had has turned into a friend mm-hmm. at some point. So it's allowed me to have a huge friend network, you know, for sure.
Yeah, you and I have that in common. I just told someone last week, there's probably not anywhere in the United States of America, at least the 48 contiguous states, that I could get a wild hair in my head to go to, that there wasn't somebody I could crash on their couch.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way too, all over. Yeah. So, and you're probably like I am too. You know, I've got people overseas in Europe that, you know, I've done work with over the years and everything. So, you know, it's funny. I've had people tell me, because I've been kind of frustrated with work, it feels like my whole life. Well, not really my whole life. When I first, I had the only corporate job I had was with USA Today a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I was with them for 13 years. And I really enjoyed the work, and that I really needed to also go out on my own, because I just wanted to do things my way. That's that control thing, you know, is like, I could do this so much better than you guys are doing this, you mm-hmm. know, kind of thing. And so I have a bachelor's degree in printing, mm-hmm. Printing management and technology. So I kind of started out my career as a printer. And I still say that I've got ink running through my veins. You know, that's the big thing, is that the printing has always been the brought me the most joy in my life. And that was when I was literally printing, not just ordering it online. It was, you know, I do that now for clients, but when I was actually physically printing, and it was a lot of fun and it was great. So
can I interrupt you too late now if I interrupt your train of thought, but
that's all right.
That joy you're talking about of doing the actual printing, do you, because I know you do layout, page layout, and mm-hmm. book layout stuff.
Right.
Is that a way that you now get that hit only digitally instead of?
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured it might
be. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love type, and I love typefaces. You and I have numerous times gotten on the phone and looked at type together, like, what is the name of this font? You know, It was really easy back in the old days when I was much younger, because, you know, it was relatively limited. But then all of a sudden, you know, the digital stuff came along, and there's every weird name for basically the same typeface for a lot of things. So it's not quite as easy to identify anymore.
Right.
But that was always fun to me, too, is to be able to, when I worked for Gannett, for USA Today, I had people all over the country would send me images of something and say, what typeface is this?
You were you were my go-to guy for
this font. I know. I always had a reputation for that. And so Bill's son, Tim, is also a graphic designer, and he and I many times have put our heads together to try to figure out a combination of typefaces that would look good on a particular job that he might be working on or that I might be working on. So
yeah,
it was fun. I like that. So, you know, I've done that, and I, along about 2006, I got a 2005, I guess it was, I went and I got trained in teaching law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I also got trained in how to teach people to do teleclasses at the time. Mm-hmm. Because at the time we didn't have Zoom, we didn't have this, we didn't have all this other stuff. We basically had the telephone.
Yeah.
And so there were certain techniques and things to do, you know, on the telephone that would make it more interesting and keep people engaged and all that. And so I used to teach that as well for another company, a Canadian company. And then, but then I also got trained in how to teach the law of attraction. And so I started doing that and did that kind of as a side thing while I was still doing graphic layouts and work for people in that regard. So I was doing all that together. Oh, but what I started to say earlier was that I've had people say to me over and over and over again, Marty, if you could just focus on one thing, And that's always been the hardest thing for me. And that has just recently come up for me again. Just focus on one thing. So when I was talking about the websites and making all these different websites, if I got a wild hair, I made a website mm-hmm. for it, even though it never went anywhere, or I'd forget that I'd done it. I mean, when that thing blew up, there were so many websites, I'd forgotten the ones that I had done. But I had the notion that you had to do a website for every little single thing that you did, you know,
mm-hmm.
For every ebook you put out, for every, you know, it needed its own website. Well, it really didn't. But anyhow, it took me a while. It took that blow up, really, for me to get back in. Kind of that, let you get me
that
back.
And me holding your hosting account password.
Oh, I know. That's so funny. I still, I keep looking over here because I think it's there and it's not. It's somewhere else. It's not even in my computer anywhere. So you still hold the keys, and that's probably the best thing in the world. Yes, I think that's hilarious that, you know, it's like, okay, Marty, you can't be responsible. So I'm taking your access away.
Yeah.
So that's what you did. So, anyway, I've just
you in this way and
yeah,
you from hurting yourself.
Yeah. I have tried to call myself a Renaissance man, you know, to make it more palatable that, that I've got many, many interests, and I do have many, many interests. About things, but they don't necessarily all have to turn into a business.
Well, and I have another book recommendation for you. I
cool.
just need to verify the lady's name. And She wrote a book about us called, and you probably may already know about this book, Refuse to Choose by Barbara Scherer.
Yeah, Barbara Scherer just died last year.
Did she?
Yeah, well, broke my heart.
Yes,
I've read that book.
Well, I've started it, and I've gotten as far. Where'd you go?
I'm here.
Oh, your visual went away. Anyway,
I can see both of us. So.
Okay, well, I've started reading it, and certainly identify with the frustration of not being one of those people who had a very clear goal about what they wanted to do for a living, because that definitely describes me as well. Now, given the way you said, yeah, I've read that book, I haven't finished it. And now I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Am I going to sound like that when I'm done with it too? So tell me what makes you talk like that.
Makes me growl.
Yeah. Is it about the book, or is it about the fact that you still are beating yourself up for having so many interests?
Oh, very much still beating myself up, not for having the interest, but for not choosing. Just like the title is kind of misleading in that when she says refuse to choose, what she's really, the ultimate thing in the book is the same thing, is this focus on one thing at a time. You can do lots of things, but you need to really be focused on one thing at a time. And that doesn't necessarily mean to the exclusion of other things, but you just need to figure out a way that you can manage your time so that you can focus on those things. But ultimately, what she's talking about is do this, and when you're finished doing that, do the next thing.
Well, that is how you do things.
Well, kind of, except that I don't necessarily always finish, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like there's always that interest that's hanging out there. So, I mean, I'm in that state right now. But the nice thing is that right now I'm thinking, I'm not jumping in and doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not jumping in and doing before I'm ready to do something.
Well, baby steps, so, darling.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I figure it out, you know, I'll be focusing on something. Or three.
Or 10. And that'll be great.
Yes.
We'll one day write it, you know, read a book, The Many Faces of Marty Marsh.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one. You know, I have so many interests, including hobby stuff like puppetry and calligraphy and that sort of thing. And I don't take time to do those. I was having a chat with a client of mine that we meet every week, and he was asking me some questions, and I said, I'd love to have a hobby, but I have no idea what to do. And he goes, my God, you're a calligrapher, you do puppetry. And he started naming off all of these things that he knows about what I've done, you know, for fun. And he said, don't sit here and tell me that if you want to have a hobby, you don't have any options for hobbies. Just go do one. You know, I haven't, you know, but
I still have in the back of my head that idea you and I talked about when I was out there visiting you.
Yes.
The puppets you had made.
Yes.
Us,
yes.
Figuring out a way to, from our separate locations, create video using those puppets and voice our voices.
Yes.
To do something. Like, I don't even care. You know, I think I'm going to start banging on you about that again. Because like doing this podcast, and like you, I have a lot of interests, and, you know, I love to sing. I love growing plants. I love my front yard to look real pretty with flowers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I spend time doing that in the spring. But I'm not a gardener, and I'm not a singer. Karaoke is the best I can do at this point, unless I find a band. Oh,
yeah. And then you get discovered.
I don't even care about getting discovered. I just want to sing with a band.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have all those interests as well. I can I mean, I can mud and tape drywall and embroider. I mean,
right. I can embroider too.
The range is wide, and like you, I don't spend any time, much of any time, doing any of those things. And I'm like,
no.
Why? Because, well, there's a lot of answers to that. But
yeah, with me too.
But this whole pick one thing. Yes, I think we do need to have some measure of ability to focus in the moment on what we're doing.
Yes.
But I don't think we have to, especially for people like us. If we try to force ourselves to do things the way people who are not like us do them, then A, we're lopping off huge parts of who we are to mold ourselves to be that other way. And that's no good. I don't care what you're doing. You should not be chopping out or invalidating huge chunks of who you are, because that's just not okay.
Right.
But I think also you and I are two great examples of, we may not be able to pick one thing that we want to just dive headfirst into and never come back out of. But you and I have been able to make a living with our disparate interests and things. And so obviously we can focus enough to get something done.
One,
you know, and I think too, that a lot of our variance in the interests that we have, they provide a richer context for the thing that we might find ourselves doing in any given moment as well. Because I can't think of a specific example right now, but I have often caught myself, look, I'm using knowledge from X to do Y. How about that? And I love that. And if I hadn't had any exposure or experience or interest in that other thing, then I'd be missing that in that moment. So,
well, you know, I surprise myself oftentimes and don't know where it comes from when something goes wrong, say on my computer, and I just keep working until I figure it out. And then afterwards, I literally sometimes think, how did the hell did you know how to do that? How did you do that without asking somebody, you know? Mm-hmm. And so so I'm pleased about things like that when that happens too.
Well, and did you hear yourself? Earlier, what? You said that you have a really hard time asking for help.
Yes.
So born of that is this persistent, investigative whatever that is what is at work when you are trying to solve a problem and not asking for help with it.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
That's where that comes in.
Yeah.
We adapt. And
yep.
If it's important enough, and in those cases, it obviously was, or you wouldn't have stuck with it until you got it solved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That persistence beats resistance every time, babe. We know this.
Yep. I know it. Well, you know that I guess it was 2018 when I got certified to be a health coach, you know. I was looking at the time, I'd always done marketing stuff, marketing related stuff, especially around email and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was really tired of doing that. And I just wanted to do something different. And somebody suggested to me that I might make a good health coach based on an assessment thing that I had done, you know, kind of like doing the Myers-Briggs thing. But it was more for career, more oriented toward career stuff. And being a health coach was one of the things that popped up. And I never really thought about doing that. But then I started investigating and thought this would be a lot of fun and I can do this. And I did for a while. But it wasn't, I realized as I was doing it that it was really was not where my heart was at. And because all I ever think about is marketing. Mm. I'm like you. All I ever think about is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's really hard to take that lens out from in front of my eyes.
It is for sure.
And it's on my ears too.
Yeah. And I go on all these calls with with other people, and I listen how they're struggling with their marketing and how they're struggling with their email marketing, especially, you know, and it's not just the technical side of it, it's all of it. And I think, you know, this really isn't that hard. You're making this way too hard. I don't say that because I don't have an opportunity to. Mm-hmm. And I certainly am not going to use those as occasions to try to get clients, although, boy, I'd love to. I'd love to post in the chat, call me, please, you know.
Yeah.
I just don't do that. But, you know, that's really where my heart is at, is in marketing. I think that I'll always love marketing because that's just what it comes down to for me.
Yeah.
So I'm back at that stage of, okay, how do I want to do this? But I'll tell you that I may have told you this the other day when we were talking, but with all of these health issues that I've had that surprised me, I've been on and off different kind of drugs and different kind of dosages and all this kind of stuff. And one of the more recent drugs, I think it had to be one of the drugs because that's when it started, was I could not stay awake.
Mm.
So I would literally be sitting here at my desk and I'd fall asleep, just sitting upright, fall asleep.
And not
hour
feeling
late.
Coming on?
No, it's just like, I just go to sleep.
Like a switch is flipped. Huh?
It's almost like a narcolepsy kind of thing, except that's not what it is. They've adjusted my drugs to, so that I'm not really experiencing that. I think we finally hit on which one it was different times when I'm taking it so that I'm not falling asleep at my desk or falling. I mean, when I'm talking to clients on the phone, I have sometimes thought that I went to sleep. I don't know if I did or not, but then I'm just horrified to think, oh my God, you can't go to sleep with a client. So to tell you the truth, that has really scared me.
Yeah.
And has kept me from making any decisions about going forward with the kind of things that I would really enjoy to do. Because for me, community is really important. I like getting together with people and talking like this and also on other things. You know, I'm part of a little mastermind group that I would be in there forever just because, number one, I love the people that are in there and I learn so much from them. But it's just that community of people like that together. And that's probably one of the, you know, I love to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I love to publish stuff and I love to have community. But here lately, I've just really been scared to commit to anything because I didn't know what was going on with my body. So once a week, feels like that's kind of coming back around to where it's supposed to be.
That's good. Yeah, it occurred to me when you were talking about your health coach and stuff. I mean, you and I have had other conversations wherein I've heard you say that, well, that was just another in the long line of things that I've tried that isn't what I want to do. And it occurs to me that you did that in 2018, and then look at 2019 and 2020 and what happened in your world with all your health issues. And I'm not saying that that was the catalyst for it by any stretch, but how convenient was it that you spent the year before all of that happening focusing on learning about health and how to help people be healthier? I think that was whatever you believe about a power greater than any one of us, a force at work that's overarching. I think that's an example of you following a lead or a clue to get information that you didn't know in the moment you yourself would need, but then that, you know, it was very prominent that you went down that path. And so I hope you can look at it that way and put down the big beat Marty stick over at least that part of it, because
yes,
you know, the money and time you invested in that, I don't think was wasted, whether you have a health coaching client one or not.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And how awesome is it that your life is configured such that you could do that and equip yourself with information and knowledge that you didn't know you would need so immediately for yourself. But your life is arranged that you could do that, and you did do that.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way. Never thought of it that way.
Well,
that's good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think, that's what hooks both you and I to be so community driven and connection driven, is those perspectives. You and I are a lot alike, yes, in many ways, but we're also wildly different in many
ways.
And the things that are different about us are what, because you repaint my picture a lot in a much more favorable way than I could do on my own all the time. So it really makes my heart feel big that I can do that for you and show you a different way, or reframe something that hadn't occurred to you, because you're very, you know, I got to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And
yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can't imagine, as much as I spend time alone, I can't imagine not having all people like you in my life that, when I'm able and up to it, and it's not like I'm so freaking feeble. I don't mean to sound like that. But when I'm ready and I'm in the groove of wanting to connect, then I have such great people to connect with.
Yeah.
And there is a very short list of you, you being among them, that I could handle every day. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
It's a very short list.
I know, I'm that way too with my list.
Yeah. So, gosh, inadvertently, you have, you know, I always come to these things equipped with a list of questions in case I can't think of something to ask you, or which is really kind of funny for us. And not surprisingly at all, we have talked about many of these things, but here's one. What is something you just couldn't live without?
Oh. You mean like if I was on a deserted island somewhere? Or no, just in general?
Like what? And not the usual stuff. I know you don't want to live without Bill. You don't want to live without me, you know,
right,
that sort of thing. But yeah, what's something that is really, really important to your life being the way you like it that you wouldn't want to live without?
Well, I'm totally in love with my computer. Does that count?
Yeah, I'm ever grateful to have been born in 64 when I was, to be alive in this digital age.
Yes.
Even given all the problems we have.
Yes.
And
well, you know, Bill,
that it's created.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. I'm not a social media person. I have to force myself to do anything at all with social media. So that's never really been my thing. Although I think oftentimes to my detriment, because it could have probably helped my business over the years. Right.
Yeah.
But Bill is a little bit older than I am, as you know, and he also was born in an era that he's always saying how grateful he is for having been born in the era and where he was. He grew up in Santa Barbara, California, and he said he had so many opportunities that were presented to him, and that his whole life has just been grabbing onto the things that were presented to him, that everything just kind of fell into place, and that he always had so much support from the people in the community back then. But, you know, it was a different time and a smaller place. But I feel grateful too, to have grown up when I did, because of all the things. I used to think about my grandmother, who lived to be just shy of her 100th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about all the things that she saw, and she and I talked about that, all the, I mean, she saw cars come along, which she didn't think would ever catch on. She said, because they scared the horses, you know, or scared the cows and the chickens and stuff. And so, so there were things like that, that I thought, oh boy, you know, she has seen so much. We see a lot. I think it just happens faster for us now than it did for them. Things were a little slower. So you could kind of see the delineation between, you know, cars and phones and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
With us, you know, with every time Apple comes out with a new phone, there's some new technology built into that, or they probably wouldn't be coming out with a new phone. I'm assuming that that's their goal.
Also planned obsolescence on there.
I think it is too. Because like my phone now, the battery's starting to, it's like, I'm not getting as much juice as I did, you know, and I think this is, or it doesn't last as long.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just seen, you know, we see so much stuff happening and it's just happening boom, boom, boom so fast that I don't think we really notice that we are living in just an incredible age. I mean, just think that this morning, William Shatner, good old Captain Kirk, blasted off into space for 10 minutes. You know, how cool is that?
Yeah.
That we've come that far, that stuff that I used to love to read Popular Mechanics magazine, which is kind of what got me going in. It did get me going in the printing business, because in the back of Popular Mechanics magazine, there was a little tiny ad about how you could print your own stuff. And so I set my goal to get one of those printing presses, and I did. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time, so I used to sell hot dogs to my dad's farm workers so that I could get enough money to buy my printing press.
What I love about that is that's how you started making money. And many times talked about that's how you want to end up making money as well.
Yeah.
And all the fun you had in between the two hot dog endeavors.
Oh, I tell you, I have always said that when I retired, I was going to be selling hot dogs on a beach somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I really need to find that beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know how to sell the hot dogs. I've done that course too. So, you know, you name it, I've probably done it there. I don't know how we get off track here or how I get us off track on whatever it was that you asked me, but what could I not live without? I don't know. I can think of things that I would hate to not live without, but I could.
I don't think that there's one singular answer to it either. You know, for me, when James and I talked, you know, I asked him this question and I told him that, you know, I hope I never have to choose, but if I would far rather be blind than deaf.
Oh.
Because I don't want to live without music. And then I've thought about it since that conversation and I thought, well, you know, music can be felt, not in addition to heard. It's a very different experience. And thinking about never seeing, you know, my kids' faces or all the beautiful scenery in this world, just knock on wood, I hope I never have to choose either one.
I know. I agree.
Music is definitely one of those things that I don't want to live without.
I'm just the opposite. I love music, and I find that, you know, music is just a wonderful soother.
Yep.
Probably more than anything, but also I find that music helps me work better. Music helps me focus and all that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't want to lose my hearing, but I really don't want to lose my sight.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was
brush with that too.
I have, you know,
about there
2 years ago, I was very close to losing my sight and I was just absolutely terrified of it happening. But then I thought, you know, I can manage if I have to. So I'm thankful, though, that I found the right doctors to fix me and not having to, you know, it's not great even right now, but, you know, I'm at least I can see, which is wonderful.
Yes.
So I'm grateful for that. So. But you know what, Suzanne, and I don't know how much we've probably gone way over the time that you need to do this or that you need for this. But something we haven't mentioned, and I should have mentioned it right at the get-go, is that, you know, you're my wife from another life.
Yep.
We haven't mentioned that.
No.
And I think it's funny. Didn't somebody think when they heard you say that one time that we were divorced?
Yeah.
Yeah, that we had been married and divorced. But for those listening, what it really means is.
And there's the cliffhanger we're going to leave you with this week. Tune in next week for part 2 with my good friend Marty Marsh. If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here,
I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.